And how wonderful to, I just am often like trying to drink from the fire hose that I get when I get an opportunity to speak to you guys, because I don't know who does it, but somebody does something, and I get all this download. Like, you guys would be here till about 3 this afternoon. If I could, you know, I've been praying mostly, God, how do I share this exactly in a format that makes any sense? But the wonderful thing is that I always just feel so loved here. And so welcome. And it is just, and anybody that I've invited to come and the people that have shared their experience with me, I always say the same thing about Peace Church. Wow, what an oasis. What a place to get a drink from the Lord. It just is that. So normally on Sundays, for many, many years, my wife and I, through her great pleading, teach special needs, as I've talked about before. And these are older people with, you know, some of them are older than me, and that's old. We're talking their 60s. And many of them have Down syndrome, and many of them have autism. And several, I don't really know what they have, because we're not allowed to discuss that kind of thing, but many of them are not verbal. They don't speak. But they smile and they pray, and I think God put them there to teach me a great deal more than I've ever taught them. But it's always a challenge, because if you're going to teach something at a level that they can understand and that you can see that they have some understanding, you've got to pretty much have a grip on what it is that you're teaching to begin with, right? So we've actually gone through the whole Bible, and we're in Ephesians, and Ephesians chapter 4, where we teach in sign language. So I went to teach this verse, and I think the thing about being a disciple, that word means to be an enthusiastic learner. But to be a learner, you got to first admit that you don't know something before you can ask a question to get an answer. So it takes a great deal of humility to be a learner, because you got to admit, I don't know what this means. And so I'm teaching Ephesians 4:3, which is, you know, probably noted in your bulletin as the verse of what we're talking about today. But the way that that goes in sign language is make. Make every, and I like this, effort is like you're driving a motorcycle. So make every effort to keep the unity of the Holy Spirit in the bond. That's the one that tricked me up. The bond of peace. Now, you know, it seemed like a simple enough verse, and I could certainly teach the words, but what exactly does that mean? What is the bond of peace? I mean, peace is an absence of strife, and it's this wonderful feeling, but in what way is there a bond there? What's the bond of peace? And clearly, Paul, as the author of Ephesians, knew his Bible really well, and he actually knew something that I discovered later, that most of the book of Leviticus, in fact, over 30 times, is where you'll find the word peace in more than any book in the Bible, is in Leviticus. And there they're talking about a peace offering, which the Jews actually call a fellowship offering. And so you think about these guys that we're talking about in the wilderness today. They're out there walking around. And they got nobody to complain about. They can't complain about the Egyptians, right? So I think you get the picture. That God had these many, 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 many fellowship offerings and all this discussion on the fellowship offering in order to keep, right, the unity of the bond of peace. So one of the things that I absolutely have delighted in this probably 18 months or so, is in my time in the morning, I go through a fairly long prayer that is structured in a lot of ways, but at one point I asked the Lord for a word for the day. Now, understand, when I realized I didn't know what the bond of peace meant, I prayed, God, tell me, what does this mean? What is the bond of peace? So I prayed, and a few days later, he threw this out in my, and you know, sometimes God will throw a word out there, he'll throw it into your face, and then he'll look at you to see if the lights come on. Like, did you get it? Did you get the punchline? Well, this was one of those times, like, here's this word, Robbie. He threw it out there. He knew it had to do with peace, and then he stood there and watched to see if the lights would come on. And the word was reality. And so as I often, he throws the word out there, reality. Okay, Lord, reality. What does reality mean? So I go look up reality, and I like etymology. I like to look at the history of words and the understanding of words. And the word reality, interestingly, comes from a Latin word. I guess you pronounce it realis, R-E-A-L-I-S. And it's a compound word. It means a relation to a thing. Now, you can imagine that God is sitting there looking me in the eye as I see this relation to a thing is equal to reality. And, you know, it took a while for my mind to catch up with my spirit as he was like, okay, Robbie, we'll get this. Okay, let me see if I can explain this to you in the way that he kind of let me know what it means. If I throw out the word hairy bacon to you, if I say that, you probably immediately picture some bacon you probably wouldn't want to eat, right? That's what pulls into your mind just immediately, right? That's because you have no relationship with hairy bacon. Hairy bacon was my grandfather. So when you say hairy bacon to me, I have a completely different reality. In fact, if you were to say Marjorie Bacon, that's my mother. And I have this amazing reality when it comes to my relationship with my mother, or Harry Bacon, or his brother, Dewey Bacon. I'm not kidding. I don't know what his parents were thinking, but that's just what they did. So God is saying, Robbie, what is your relationship to peace? How much do you really understand it? How much do you crawl around in it? How much do you really know? And so, by the way, my hope is, my prayer is for us today, that you will have a better reality about peace after the sermon today, but I can assure you, you won't have any understanding because, right? The peace of God that transcends all understanding. So if somebody tells you they understand peace, you just stand back a minute and think about that. That's not possible because he's telling you ahead of time, it transcends all understanding, but you can have more of a reality with it. You can have more of a relationship with it. And so that's where I hope we're going today. So I just, you know, God has you on this lesson plan. You're trying to understand the bond of peace, and he starts throwing things at you to begin this process. So as I began to think about peace more and more, I thought, well, you know, Paul didn't think in English. He didn't know the word peace. He certainly may have spoke Greek, but he thought in Hebrew or Aramaic, one or the other, and the word in Hebrew, which is probably what Paul was thinking about, the bond of peace, was the word shalom. And so I went on my mission to try to understand shalom. Now, interestingly, in the Bible, in the Old Testament, did you know, I didn't know actually, there are literally six different words that are translated peace in the Old Testament. They include shalem, S-H-E-L-E-M, S-H-A-L-A-M, S-H-A-L-O-W-M, that's the shalom we normally hear about, charis, C-H-A-R-A-R-A-U-S, D-A-M-A-N, Salem, like Winston-Salem, that's where I live, and Hasa. We'll talk about some of those a little bit, but clearly there's... Our language gives you one word, peace. And that's what King James, those people, they put it all together, and here you go. But oh boy, those things have really different relationships and really different meanings. So I'm blessed to walk with people like James, and I have lots of pastors that are in my life and whatever, and I'm sitting about discussing this idea, the bond of peace, with a friend of mine who's a pastor at the church in Kernersville. And he says, you know what, the Jews, when I went to seminary, what they taught about shalom, which if you look at shalom in your Strong's Concordance, it'll say health. It'll say completeness. It'll say prosperity. It'll say lack of war. But he said what they taught in seminary, and the more I've thought about this, the more I've grown accustomed to the idea, I think it may be the closest. What they taught in seminary that shalom means is death to your enemies. Whoa, that's a little heavy duty. But you don't have to read many Psalms to figure out that somebody thought that was shalom, right? I mean, how many times did David pray for the death of his enemies? Do you ever think of peace as being death to your enemies? So I went to another lunch with another friend discussing peace with him. And he says, you know, the interesting thing about peace, Robbie, is its relationship to the word in Genesis where God said he made us in his own image. Now, he made you in his own image. It's clear in the Bible it says that. But that word image right there, this is really a treasure, is T-S-E-L-E-M. It's got shalom in there. And the Hebrew understanding of that word is actually a shadow, an image of. Now, this is really, the more you think about this, is a beautiful thing. And it's no accident, I don't think, that James Matthew Barry wrote a book about a Jesus character named Peter Pan who had a shadow. And they were going to Neverland where people would never grow up, where they would have this childlike spirit forever. You think that was a good Scottish Presbyterian, I'm sure, wrote that book. But what causes a shadow? Light. Lots of it. And the more light, the bigger the shadow. Now, to the Jews, the word blessing means that God has got his face right on you. Right? When he had his face on Moses, what happened? He got this glow thing going on, right? And so the more God is facing you, the more you get a shadow. The closer in relationship you are to God, wow, you get this shadow. And part of that shadow is shalom, death to your enemies. What? Yeah. It's true. Because Ephesians 6 tells us, a couple of chapters later, right, that our battle's not against flesh and blood, but it's against spiritual forces in high places, right? Who's your enemy? I can tell you it is. This is a guy who hates God really bad. He's been hating him forever. He's got a file on you that goes from here to tomorrow. And he is your enemy. As are all the little things in your body that are killing you and whatever. So as you get closer to God's face, right, you get closer to Jesus and that relationship with Jesus, that shadow casts over you. But look at this. This is really cool. You remember the woman caught in adultery? I think about this every morning when I pray, especially when I'm sprinkling Jesus' blood over my heart. What did he say to her? Where are your accusers? Where are they? Well, when you're up here on Jesus' face, you could just say, where are you? You ain't got none. You ain't got none. And that is death to your enemies. He can't hang out when you're in his face in that shadow. You see the shalom that's involved in that? Isn't that a wonderful, amazing place to be in that place where you've got no accusers, where your enemies? Now, Jesus, being the Prince of Shalom that he was, did you ever think about, there he is, what would be on most people's biggest day, right? The triumphal entry. He's riding the horse into Jerusalem. Things are going great. He's got all these people shouting Hosanna. Things are, man, it's awesome. What's the first thing he does? He clears the temple. He makes a whip. He goes in there and he creates shalom, death to his enemies. Okay? I'm not kidding. He clears out the money changers. Now, that's not something that your average politician is going to go do, because those are the guys that have all the money. I'm just telling you. So, you know, politicians, usually they got to follow the money, just, what, you know, paying attention. But this, no. Jesus goes in there, boom, he's going to create shalom. He is going to be death to his enemies. And look what happens next. Absolutely a marvelous thing. Look in Matthew. I never saw it before until last. Started on this peace thing. In Matthew, right after the triumphal entry, what happens? After he kicks the money changers out, it made room so that he could heal the blind and the lame. The next thing that happens is those guys go, who comes in? Yes, he says, my house will be called a house of prayer. But look what happens. Out goes that group that are, they're causing shalom not to happen. Now comes these people, and they have bacteria in their bodies that are stopping shalom from happening. And so he kills that enemy. Whatever is stopping these people from seeing, whatever is stopping these people from being able to walk, right? Death to their enemies. Now, we use movie clips on the Masculine Journey, and I think that, you know, they're kind of like modern-day parables. You can see things, and they create an image that just never goes away from me. And there's a movie. It's called First Night, and it stars Sean Connery, and he's just an amazing actor, you know? And he plays King Arthur. And there's a scene where Guinevere's hometown, I can't tell you what it is getting besieged by this critter that's really the super bad guy in the whole plot. And he comes in and he's trying to get King Arthur to negotiate for peace. He's trying to get him to compromise so that he won't bring on war. And Sean Connery can say it way better than I'm going to say it. You'll watch the clip and you'll never forget what he says. He says, there's a kind of peace that only comes on the other side of war. And he says that as only James, as Sean Connery can say it. There's a peace that only comes on the other side of war. And this is what Jesus was about. This was Christmas Day. We think of this child coming in the manger, and it's you know, meek and mild and holy. It was like Christmas Day literally was like D-Day for the enemy. I mean, there was a beachhead being formed in Bethlehem that was way bigger deal than D-Day was. And the enemy was at it like, we have no idea. I mean, how many babies died within a very short period of time of Jesus' arrival? You think it was like this really meek and mild, peaceful? No, those people were running for their lives. Herod was killing their babies. This is a war that we are in, and the way John Eldridge puts it, which I think is great, is that it's a love story, but it's put in the context of a raging war that has been going on. And so, if we get to the Levitical peace offerings, right? I mean, you can start in chapter 3 and you can look, there's 30 different times that they make reference to this peace offering. You know how you made peace in a peace offering? First thing you had to do is you had to pick out your favorite sheep or goat, the one that didn't have any blemishes, the one that you cherished since it was a little guy. Then you bring it to the priest at the altar and you put your hand on its head. And no, the priest don't kill this one. Check it out. You kill it. Have you ever had anybody put their hand on your head? It's a really intimate thing. You can touch me. Don't touch my hair now. Right? I mean, one of those special needs guys is always gets a butch haircut. He's got red hair, and he just loves, Robbie, feel my head. You know, it's a very intimate thing. You do it for a son, somebody you're close to, but you just don't touch somebody's head. But now you got this animal that you dearly love. You got to put your head on it, and you got to slit its throat. And those who know me well know I have, when I do my seders that I do in the spring, I'm the one that does that. I don't do it because I enjoy it. I do it so I get a sense of what this animal is sacrificing for the benefit of all that are going to take part in the ceremony. I get a sense of what the cost of peace is. Then they take the blood and they sprinkle it. This is your peace offering right here. You're slitting the throat of this animal. Have you ever seen what happens to an animal when you slit its throat? I mean, there's not a lot of peace going on. It's not a pretty thing. And there's some sprinkling of blood you don't have to do because it'll sprinkle it pretty much all over the place for you. So how, what's the connection? Where's the bond of peace in that? Right? If you're like me, you're humbly saying, huh? I mean, I have an understanding of what that is and why Jesus was, that was a picture of Jesus and whatever, but I'm still missing the unity that's in that. Why would that bring this community that is obviously having to deal with each other out in the wilderness for 40 years. How is that going to bring them together? Just exactly how does that work? Well, as we begin to get in that intimacy, that relationship, that looking God in the face, and trusting Him, this is what you want me to do? You want me to slit my goat's throat? Here I come. I'm going to trust you. This is hard. This is what you want. This must mean something. God, I trust you. All right. This is you and God, and He begins to create this shadow behind you of shalom, of His image, of what the cost of peace really is. So, for some reason, I've noticed that several good friends of mine, their favorite story in the Bible, if you ask them, what's your favorite story in the Bible? They love to tell you the story, it's in 1 Samuel, of Jonathan and his armor bearer. And you may know the story that the Philistines have, you know, taken over the land. It's before King David comes on the scene. They got everybody terrified. And Jonathan is Saul's son, very courageous. And he's got an armor bearer, and he tells the armor bearer, hey, look, there's about, you know, 1,000 Philistines up there in that mountain. I think we ought to go kick butt. And his armor bearer says, whatever's on your heart to do, I'm with you, I'm with you. And so Jonathan says, well, we're going to let them see us, and when they see us, if they don't say come up here, then we know we're not going to go up the mountain. But if they say come up here, we're coming and we're going to wipe them out. Now that's just interesting. Now you got to realize that Jonathan must have known, because he says, if that happens, then I know the Lord has given them into our hands. How would he know that unless he had some shalom going on, right? He had some FaceTime. He had some intimacy with God. He knew what the sign would be. This is no small horde of, these are Philistines, big bad dudes. I mean, we know the stories. So, I find it very curious that, as you can imagine, they go up there and they do. And they kill about 20 of them, and the result of that is all the Philistines freak out, and it was a huge win for the Israel home team. Shalom going on all over the place. A lot of dead enemies. and it was a huge win to the battle. But for some reason, why is it that my friends love that story? Why do they love that story? Because it's not like I'll be having a conversation with another one, they'll bring up that story. I'll have a conversation with another one, they'll bring up that story. What is it about that story that they love? Men, probably, you know. And I was asking God that, and he said, because you are my armor bearer. He tells you every day. He does. He tells you every day. I think we need to go kick some tail. I think we need to get the job done here. And you say, whatever is in your heart to do, Lord, I'll do it. Well, if this happens, then we're going to go do this. Okay, Lord, I'm with you 100%. And then what do? You're putting on your armor. You're the one praying. You're the one who is putting on the breastplate and the helmet and all these different things. You're an armor bearer. And you're an armor bearer for the Lord. Well, interesting thing that when Jesus decides he's going to come to Jerusalem, he sends out 70. You know how he sends them out? In twos. One Jonathan character, one armor bearer, one guy to go, one guy to pray. And if you look in that passage, it's another one of those peculiar things about peace. It says, when you enter a house, it's in Luke chapter 10, when you enter a house, you know, if you're not sensing any peace, you know, don't go there. But if you're sensing peace, it says, find the Son of Peace. Now, that's an interesting thing, another place that we can kind of enjoy peace and get into reality with peace. What does that mean, a Son of Peace? That's somebody who's casting a shadow. You've been around him. You see that, right? You know what that feels like. And then let your peace rest on them. You know, how does that exactly work? You've got to be casting your shadow. So there's something to that. Jesus knew there was a whole lot of enemies from where he was in Galilee between him and Jerusalem, and he sent out 70, two by two, to clear the road so that he could make it to the cross. But the reason those people were going was to bring shalom, death to his enemy. His enemy was Satan. But those people were coming in those towns to bring death to the enemy. It's kind of cool, isn't it? So that he could clear the temple, so that he could heal the sick, so that he could go to the cross. Now, I prayed and prayed. God, give me a story where I've experienced this in my life, where I had an armor bearer. And I brought shalom. You know what he gave me? I was on my way here when he slipped this into my mind and then just sat back and laughed. He said, Robbie, tell him about Rasputin the Skunk. So if you've never heard about Rasputin the Skunk, it kind of is my franchise story. Edith knows about Rasputin the Skunk because it was at her house. So Edith's husband's name was Vic, and he was my best friend, in fact, introduced me to my wife. And Edith used to work at, what was the name of the place where we bought our shotguns? That you work?
Best Products
in Richmond. And so Vic and I had bought these shotguns together. We had the exact same shotguns. And I had come to North Carolina, was doing that, and I came to their house to visit one time. Vic was still there, and their son Doug and their son Greg. And when I get there, the whole yard stinks like skunk. Horrible. I mean, just like, I've smelled skunk, but I mean, this is serious. And I'm like, Vic, what in the world's going on with the skunk, buddy? And he goes, well, our dog, man, he goes out there, that skunk is, here it comes every single time, it's going to spray him. And I said, well, you still got that shotgun that, like mine that we bought? I said, yeah. I said, well, get me a few shells. And so her son, Doug, was my armor bearer. He held the shells. I had the shotgun. He said, all you got to do is shine a light out there in the backyard and Rasputin will come after you. Now, why do you call him Rasputin? Well, you may know that in the Russian Tsar days, there was a monk named Rasputin. And he got underneath the political powers skin, and they tried to kill Rasputin. Well, if First thing they did was give him enough poison to kill about 10 men, and he just sat there and enjoyed the rest of dinner. So they took him down to the basement, and they stabbed him about 20 times, and for good measure, they shot him twice. Then they wrapped him up in a sheet, threw him in the frozen Thames River. That ought to kill him. It didn't. So Rasputin is known. He actually drowned in the river. That's what they finally found, you know. So Rasputin died eventually. But he was one tough hombre, and so was Rasputin the skunk. So with my armor bearer, Doug, and my shotgun, my armor bearer's got the flashlight. I'm prepared to shoot Rasputin. We go out to the side yard, and I don't know if you ever noticed how skunks they, you know, they waddle. So as soon as he puts the light on, oh, Rasputin, here it comes, you know. And I'm a pretty good shot. Bam, I blew, and I saw Rasputin roll up in the woods. I mean, he was shot. I mean, it was clearly, this is a done deal. Rasputin is dead. So we headed about two more steps, and oh, baby, here come these two eyes back out of the dark, waddling. Oh, is Rasputin coming back for more? Boom, I shoot Rasputin. He rolls back up in the woods. I'm like, what in the heck is up with this guy? You know, we're like a little more cautious now. We're flishing the light in there, and not long, and here come those two eyes. There's Rasputin, and he's wiggling, and he's coming at me. Boom, I shoot him again. Rolls up in the woods. Well, that empties the shotgun, but fortunately, I had my armor bearer there to give me some shells, and I'm jacking him in this gun because Rasputin's coming, and I don't want to get sprayed. So, about the time I get the third shell in there, what happens? But Rasputin, here he comes, mean, you know, and he's heading for me, and boom, I blow him, and rolls back up in the woods. I'm like, I just can't believe a skunk could take four shotgun shells. That's unbelievable. So we're shining the light, and oh man, here come them eyes again, Rasputin wiggling, you know, bam, shoot him the fifth time. Rasputin rolls back up in the woods. I'm like, man, I got two more shells. And Doug's like, yeah, I didn't bring any more out here. I don't know what we're going to do. Sure enough, here he comes, sixth time, right? Boom, here comes Rasputin, just wiggling. But bam, shoot him, you know, roll up in the woods. And now by this time, I don't know if you've ever smelled skunk, but just take that and multiply it by 400. I mean, the smell of skunk was so much in the air that you just like Rasputin was a super-powered animal that could just not only take on amazing amounts of firepower, but could spray unbelievable amounts of skunk spray. All of our clothes were ruined, right? He'd worn his father's good shoes out there. His pants, his shirt, all this stuff, you know. So finally, after six shots, we got no more shotgun, no more Rasputin, right? So we're looking, right? And we go up there with a flashlight. And you know what? Six dead skunks. But shalom, there was peace. We had killed our enemy. No doubt, right? That's shalom. What did you say?
Blessed assurance.
It was. Well, I think they just come to the light.
Yeah.
I think it's like just something they do. And why they all did it? So I could tell this story for years.
I'm glad you had six.
And this is absolutely true stuff, right, Edith? You were there. You lived it. This is not made up story. This is Rasputin the skunk. But it does prove a very valid point that there are way more against you than you have any idea. You think you're battling one demon? Huh? You are battling legions. Legions. They're replacements. They're backups. their devices. It's a battle. There's a shalom, there's a peace that only comes on the other side of war. Now, the word that concerns me is this word, charash. C-H-A-R-A-S-H. That's when you hold your peace. That's when you hold your tongue. That's when you let the money changers hang out in your heart, right? Because if Jesus is going to come in there and heal it, it's your goat you got to kill first. It is your goat. And if you're compromising with these money changers, that all these idolatrous things that are in, it gives your enemy all this foothold in order to rain down things into your world that will break you and hurt you. And hurt people hurt people. So I figured this, me and Doug, although I was hoping Doug would be here, because me and Doug have fought a common enemy. We have a bond of peace. There's a thing called a band of brothers. You find anybody that's been in some kind of a military struggle, had men that they've battled with. There's a bond in there that comes from a unity of when you're fighting a common enemy. Now, if they could continue to give these fellowship on our offerings, you see in the book of Leviticus so many different times, if they could get their own selves to the point of peace, get in the Savior's face, get that big shadow going, being able to spend that time with him and all that, then they're casting their shadow, plus they're fighting the common enemy. They're not fighting each other. Isn't that cool? But the thing I love about it the most is just the whole idea of the intimacy that's right there between me and God in order to walk every day, because I don't know what Rasputin's coming up next. Right? And I know I've already gone long, but I would be remiss if I didn't share something God put on my heart and said, Robbie, you got to share this. I said, okay. And if you heard yesterday's show, forgive the fact that I got to cover this material again a little bit, but Miriam was the first Mary in the Bible. Miriam means bitterness. Her name is Hebrew for the word Mary. And all the Marys that come after Miriam were named after her. So do you think it's a coincidence that there was a Mary that was the mother of Jesus? Do you think it was a coincidence that there was a Mary that was the first one to see Jesus after the stone was rolled away? Do you think it was a coincidence that it was Mary whose brother was raised from the dead? Think it was, maybe. Well, the more you know about Miriam, I think she really is an amazing, amazing lady, and she had shalom, and there's a reason she had shalom, because she obviously fought a lot of battles. She was the one, according to what the Jews teach, that actually told Moses' parents, you need to come together in union to have a baby or there will be no deliverer, when she was 5 years old. She was the one who followed Moses in the bulrushes. She was in the water at this point. And the Bible teaches that she was there after they crossed the Red Sea, and she was the one who sung the song of Miriam, which is to the Jews a huge deal. And so when they're playing the tambourine and they're singing, they're singing to an extent from what happened with Miriam, who obviously had a heart for worship and had a heart for the Lord. Well, I heard you talking about how water came in the desert, in the wilderness, which you guys are studying. Well, the first time was right after they crossed the Red Sea, and they came to Marah, which was bitterness. And you're right. He threw a branch. Very critical that that's a branch that went in the water. Think about it. They'll translate it as tree, but It was a branch that went in the water that made the water sweet. But right after that, they were at Horeb the first time, and it was the first time that Moses struck the rock with his staff. But what we don't know, because it's not taught to us, but is taught to all the Jewish kids from the time they're little bitty, is that rock that he struck became Miriam's well. And Miriam's well was a rock that followed them in the desert. And if you look carefully, you might want to write this down just to check me. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul makes reference to it. He says, the rock that followed them in the desert. That rock was Miriam's well. And Miriam would sing to the rock. This is critical, I think, to understanding a lot of stuff in the Bible. Miriam sang to the rock, and when she did, it didn't, and this is the Jews teaching this, not Christians, which is crazy that they can't see this, but nonetheless, here it is. When she would sing to the rock, it didn't trickle water, it gushed water. It created like a geyser. And it fed all the animals and all the people. So here's Miriam singing to this rock. And when she does, right, the fountain of living water. Get the picture? This is Miriam's worship. She is singing to this rock. And it's giving water to the thirsty. It's unbelievable. This thing's following them in the desert. In fact, it was the original rock and roll song. I'm just telling you. The roll. This rock, literally, they teeth it. It rolled through. It looked like a beehive or a sieve, and they said it was round, and it rolled through the desert, and she would sing, and away you go. It was rock and roll. No wonder rock and roll caught on. It had to. Now, do you think it's any coincidence that the stone that came away from the grave rolled for a Mary? Do you think? The Jews don't know that. They don't see it. They don't even know it. But look carefully. It's beautiful. It's amazing. It's gorgeous. Right? We know Moses. Poor Moses. He's like any other guy. I'm going to get water out of this rock. He whacks it. What the heck? You know, why are you whacking the rock? I'd never seen this until I've been studying this for the last few days. Numbers 21. What does God tell Moses to do to the well? Sing to the well. Sing to the well. Look at it. It's right there in Numbers 21. It's been sitting there the whole time. Just didn't know it. Just floating in there. So you can discover it at some point in time where... And by the way, Miriam dies in Kadesh in Numbers chapter 20. No more water. That's when Moses has to hit the rock because he's not there. She's not there to sing to the rock anymore. Numbers 21, they got to sing to the well. That's worship. That's getting in Jesus' faith. That's getting into relationship with him. That's getting close. That's getting all the light. That's getting the whole deal. So I say all that just to say this, which I know you're going to say, Robbie, does this go on forever? Well, I told you it was. Miriam, like any big sister you ever knew, decided to be bossy. I had two of them, I understand completely. And she decides that Moses shouldn't marry a Cushite woman. Bad idea. And she grumbles, I think it's Numbers 15. She and Aaron, they grumble, right? What happens? Interestingly, this is beautiful. What the Jews teach is that Pharaoh's daughter, when she came down to the Nile, the reason why she was coming to the Nile was to get rid of leprosy. And she wanted the Nile God to be able to do that. Instead, here comes a floating basket with a Hebrew boy in it, clearly in a Hebrew blanket. She picks him up, and immediately he cures her from leprosy, and she's like, you the man! Right? You get the picture? It's like, no wonder she kept him. I mean, you know, and Miriam's right there. Well, I got that lady that would nurse him for you and all this stuff, right over here, and there you go. So, when she grumbles against Moses, you know what she gets? Leprosy. And that freaks Moses out because obviously he loves his sister, and Moses is a real humble dude. He doesn't care what she said. He's like, God, you can't give my sister leprosy. This can't happen. What are you doing? And you know what? God told him this is really cool. He says, you know, even if her father spit in her face, She'd have to go outside the camp for 7 days. Death to the enemies. He knew Miriam had an enemy on her back. He knew she needed to go out in the wilderness in order to fight that thing off. He knew all that. Death to her enemies. It was a harsh reality to send her with leprosy outside the camp. But you know what she did when she got there? And you know how I know it? She sang to the rock. You know how I know it? Look how God honored her. Do you know that Mary is the most common name in all the world? You know, she doesn't have a name like Hitler that everybody, you know, it's not Benedict Arnold, it's Mary. I bet you there are several Marys in here. You didn't maybe know your name meant bitter. But it was from the bitterness of slavery. See, Miriam was born during the bitterness of slavery. And the bitterness of the curse is a picture of what Mary is. But Jesus is the one who opened the rolling rock that she sang to. And the living water gushed out. The discussion at the woman of the well means so much more when you add some of that in there, doesn't it? It's beautiful. It's amazing. So yes, I'm finally done. I know you were supposed to cut it off at 32. I don't know where that went. But it is my prayer that you would, you may know that to woe or to curse in Hebrew means that God would turn his face from you. But blessing means that he's going to turn his face upon you. To get in his presence and to get in his face is going to bring shalom. It's going to bring a broad shadow that not only affects you, but affects all the people that you're in fellowship with. It affects your church, it affects your family, it affects all those things. So I will pray. Lord, this has been so much fun. And I just pray that you would turn your face on us, that we would humble ourselves, admit we can't do this without you, that we desperately need you, that we thirst tremendously. Help us to sing with our hearts to you. Sing to the rock that in worship of how awesome you are, that you would flow springs of living water out to all of us to bless your congregation and your people as people walk in your shadow. And I ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.